All right. Turn to the second chapter of Zephaniah. A little book with just three chapters, but a unique book in that it pictures the judgment of the nation in such strong terms. I don't think you'll find a book in the New Testament in the Old Testament, that's any stronger than it is. For in the first chapter, he dealt there with the coming judgment that would take all men, how he would cut them off, and cut off the people and all that. What he would do in the second chapter there, first chapter. Now, I want to turn to the second now. Gather yourselves together, yea, gather together, O nation, that hath no shame. Now, and then he goes on to say, before the decree bring forth, before the day pass and the chaff, before the fierce anger of Jehovah come upon you, before the day of Jehovah's anger come upon you, seek ye Jehovah, all ye meek of the earth, that have kept his ordinances. Seek righteousness, seek meekness. It may be that he will be hid in the day of Jehovah's anger. Now who's he talking about? Some think he's talking about the Philistines, whom he goes on to talk about next. I don't think so. I think he's talking about, that's a conclusion really, to what he said in verses 14 to 18 in the last chapter, where there he was speaking to Jerusalem and Judah of the judgment that was to come upon them. So he was talking here, so he's talking about them in this passage. Let me look at that again. Now we read it. Gather yourselves together, yea, gather together, O nation that hath no shame. That would be the nation of Judah, God's people, who should have been ashamed of what they had done, but they had come to the point that they had no shame. They were like, one of the prophets speaks of them, like a harlot spotless. She has no shame, or shows no shame. So this nation was that way, and I think of the United States when I think of that. And what we've come to today in our nation, there seems to be no shame anymore to what people can do or what they do. And it's all accepted now. Homosexual, lesbians, abortions, all of that. Children born out of wedlock, live-in companions. All of those things are accepted today. I think our nation is fast reaching the same point that Judah had reached back there at this particular time. Remember now, this is about 630 or 25 B.C. The Assyrians were still in power. The Babylonians were rising to power. They would be the ones through whom God would execute this judgment. So maybe that will help us to understand the condition and situations as we read our nation, our history of our nation today. Now he said, before the decree bring forth. Now here he's calling upon them to change here, to make your change. Gather yourselves together that hath no shame before the decree bring forth. That is, before the things of verses 14 to 18 are fulfilled. Before God does that. So as long as we still have life, we can have hope if we'll do something about it. But we've got to do it before the judgment falls. Once the judgment falls, it's too late then. You'll be on its way. Before the day pass as the chaff, before the fierce anger of Jehovah. Here the chaff out here, they're winnowing the wheat. Here comes a whirlwind. Tear that chaff away in every direction. So also it was going to be with you, God said. Before that day comes, make your change. Before the fierce anger of Jehovah come upon you, before the day of Jehovah's anger cometh upon you. Notice he repeats that. Said this twice. His fierce anger. The day of his anger. Before that comes. Right, so now is the day of the Lord. Is the acceptable time. As Paul said to Corinthians. Behold, now is the acceptable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. It's always now. Not going to be after a while. Now when the judgment begins to fall on this nation, going to be too late. And it's coming. I don't know when it'll come. I don't know what sort. I know it always has. I know it always will. The nation reaches the point of this nation when it has no shame, whether it be sexual shame or immorality, or whether it be political shame or corruption or crookedness, or in economics, commerce, no shame there, to rob, to cheat, whatever it might be. Well, when you reach that point, judgment is going to come one of these days. All right, now again, now seek. Now know three times seek. Seek ye Jehovah, all ye meek of the earth. Now the meek of that is not necessarily a weak person, but is an individual who is meek and submissive in his spirit and will to that of another, especially unto God. So we said, seek ye Jehovah, all ye meek of the earth, that have kept his ordinances. Now these are the few faithful ones that are left. Seek righteousness, seek meekness. It may be that ye will be hid in the day of Jehovah's anger. Now notice there's not a guarantee there. We may have to suffer vicariously. Now vicarious suffering is an innocent person suffering for the guilt or the cause of the guilt of the guilty person. Now Jesus suffered vicariously. That's what the 53rd chapter of Isaiah that we read so often, and we can never read it too often, that beautiful and wonderful chapter, that Jesus presented there as a vicarious sufferer, the innocent suffering for the guilty. Right? Now if judgment comes and we suffer, it'll just be a part of that way of things working out. It'll be the righteous suffering for the guilty. And so we may have to suffer with them, but it may be that we'll be hid in that day. That God in the providence in some way, those will be hid in the day of Jehovah's anger. But now he turns to the Philistine cities to the west. Now you'll notice here, if we look at this chapter, that here the judgment is announced in all directions. Come on down here, and here it is. Alright, and down here is Philistia. So here then is Philistia to the west. And so he mentioned these cities first. He turns over here to Moab, to Ammon and Moab. That would be to the east here. And then from the east, he moved down to the south, way down south, and then up to the north, up here to Assyria. So it's a word of judgment, as I said the other day. Now then, he's going to pronounce judgment on those nations in all directions, west and east and south and north. So notice that. So now he turns to Philistia first. At Philistia down to the west on the seacoast. For Gaza shall be forsaken, and Ascalon a desolation, that shall drive out Ashdod at noonday, and Ekron shall be rooted up. Now here then these four cities. Now there's another city, the city of Gath. There was five. But I believe that Zephaniah doesn't mention Gath. And I believe it was Amos that mentioned four of them, and he didn't mention Gath. So evidently Gath had been destroyed by that time. But you still have these four, Ascalon and Ekron and Ashdod. You have these four cities here, and Gaza, all of them. So these four now are named. That's Philistia. Woe unto the inhabitants of the seacoast, the nation of the Kerethites. Now the word Kerethite occurs a time or two or three times in the Bible. One time in David's army, there were Kerethites and Pelethites in his army. Now, who they were, we're not sure, but it's generally thought that they were a part of Philistia. Probably a tribe of the Philistines down here in the south. Maybe that they were down here, behind here somewhere. But anyway, the Kerethites were related to the Philistines, a part of the Philistines in some way. Right, and so here he says of them, and the Kerethites, the word of Jehovah is against you, O Canaan, the land of the Philistines. Right, so it's all of the Canaanites, the land of the Philistines, and so that's looking to the west now. I will destroy thee, that there shall be no inhabitant, and the sea coast shall be pastures with cottages, or caves, the footnote says, the alternate reading is caves, which may be correct. But at any rate, it'll be in the ruins of this city that the shepherds were for shepherds and fools for the flocks. Will be in the city that are destroyed. There's enough walls left of the city there, or caves for them to find refuge in. Terrible destruction, a terrible judgment. And the coast shall be for the remnant of the house of Judah, as the remnant now. They shall feed their flocks thereupon in the houses of Ashkelon, shall they lie down in the evening, for Jehovah thy God will visit them and bring back their captivity. Now, I know what he's talking about Judah now after the captivity. Now, Judah went into captivity 586, brought back in 536. Actually, in captivity only 50 years. But anyway, when they came back, well, they possessed all of this land, for the Philistines had been destroyed by then. So, you know, this land here would be pasture land for the Jews that returned, the remnant that returned. And they would use these ruined cities as places for the flocks to lie down in. Right? And that's a complete and total judgment that pronounced here upon the Philistines. And Jehovah will visit them and bring back their captivity. We return, bring them back from the captivity, and they'll possess this land again. Right now, he moves to the east now. I've heard the reproach of Moab and the revilings of the children of Ammon. Right, here's Moab down here to the south, about here. A little too high here. Here's Moab along here. Here's Ammon up here. So now these, you remember, were the sons of Lot. So, but they'd been enemies of God and of his people all down through the history there. So these descendants of Lot, Ammon and Moab, they're going to be destroyed. And notice the description of their destruction. Another terrible one. I've heard the reproach of Moab and the revilings of the children of Ammon, wherewith they have reproached my people and magnified themselves against their border. That is trying to take the land of the Jews. Now therefore, as I live, saith Jehovah of hosts, the God of Israel, surely Moab shall be as Sodom, and the children of Ammon as Gomorrah. Right? So Sodom and Gomorrah have long stood as a symbol of total destruction. But when God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, we don't even know the exact location of those two cities. Now it's generally thought that they were down here at the south of the Dead Sea, down here. And some have thought that they have discovered some pillars or ancient ruins beneath the water here. I don't know whether they have or not. I've read that. So it's generally thought that they were at the south end of the Dead Sea. It was probably at that time was very fertile, and they were a good place to live then. I don't know anything about it. We don't know much about it. Then they, Sodom and Gomorrah, were completely and totally destroyed. One only for their sodomy, but also they were destroyed because of their pride and some other things. Ezekiel mentions five things for which the Edomites were destroyed. I mean, the Sodomites, Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. One of them was pride, other things that, along with their immorality as well. At any rate, those are the things that brought about their destruction. Now then, Moab and Ammon are going to be as Sodom and Gomorrah, complete and total destruction. Glick, a Hebrew archaeologist, posed as an Arab. He was a man so fluent in the Arab language. He posed as an Arab here. I don't remember whether first of this century or last of last century, but not in the last 100 years. He posed as an Arab and came over in here, and they gave him credit. He did archaeological excavation in all that country there. They finally got suspicious of him and had to leave. But he was able to fool those Arabs. He could talk the language so fluently. And he mentioned the villages that he looked, the ruins of old villages. Found many, many ruins in that. His book's a very interesting book. And I think I had that book. I'm not sure. I had one or two of his books at one time. But at any rate, he was a good archaeologist. Now it says here, there'll be Sodom and Gomorrah. Now notice further, the possession of nettles and salt pits. And a perpetual desolation. The residue of my people shall make a prey of them, and the remnant of my nation shall inhabit them. So God brought back the nation. Why, the remnant there, they possessed a lot of that part of the country there. Not all of it, but a lot of it. But at any rate, the point I'm making is, here Moab and Ammon came to complete destruction also. That destruction was complete. Well, he moves on from that. Here's the close of it. This shall they have for their pride, because they have reproached and magnified themselves against the people of Jehovah of hosts. Now, when an individual is against the people of God, who are they really against? Now, you remember Jesus said to Paul, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? Paul said to the Corinthians, I persecuted the church of God. So when he persecuted the church of God, who is he really persecuting? So when an individual persecutes God's people, that means that they're against God. And so today, as the people reject the truth and morality of God's people, the morality we should stand for, why, God eventually will destroy them. I don't know how long it'll take, but it will. All of this flack about Quill and his speech, they, Ray gave me a copy of that speech last week. I didn't get to read it, Ray. I'm sorry. I intend to read it for now. But at any rate, I read enough to know that what he said, he was simply defending morality. He become the butt of every so-called comedian in the country. Every fellow thinks he's a comedian, a stand-up comedian. Why, he made him the butt of his jokes there. Well, what are they making fun of? They're making fun of morality. Well, when you make fun of morality, who's back of morality? God is. So what the whole movement is anti-God. The whole humanistic movement in this country is to rule God out of our thinking. And they're doing a pretty good job of it. Not many folk today that are very concerned about God. There's still some. The thing is about this, and I want to suggest this. I don't think we should make our judgment too quickly. I'm a little prone sometimes to make my judgment too quickly on these things. But who do all the media and the television, who do they parade? The wicked. Now here's that fine class of people in this country that are solid individuals who have high moral standards. You don't hear anything about them. No, what you hear about and what's paraded before us as the good life is all this immoral stuff, drinking and all that sort of thing. Well, let's wake up to that and don't be confused by that, for there's still enough salt to preserve this country or God would destroy it. But when that salt is gone, the country is gone. Just mark that down in your little book now, and remember, when I'm gone and this thing comes, you look back and say, yes, that's what Haley said. He said there that when the salt was gone, then the end would come. And the salt is about fall fast losing its saltness. Well, I just remember those points. Moving on now. He moves on to say here that they're against Jehovah of hosts. Nine moves from them, I believe they magnified themselves against the people of God. Jehovah will be terrible unto them. For he will famish all the gods of the earth, and men shall worship him, with him every one from his place, even all the full isles of this nation. Now, where that has reference, we read this last night, and Gordon asked me that have reference to the Messianic period. It may or it may not. What it's suggesting is people are going to see the emptiness of their idolatry. Idolatry will fail, always fail. When we make our military our God, and that's what Nebuchadnezzar does. He makes his might is his God. When we make that our God, or when we make wealth our God, or when we make pleasure our God, or if we just make a little island worship it, whatever that may be that takes the place of God in the life, eventually that's going to come to an end. That's going to fail us. Then we'll recognize that these principles are right. It may take a judgment against this country that will destroy it or bring it to its knees, for people finally to realize that these things failed, and after all, God was in control. That's at least judgments are intended to do that. They don't always do that. That's one of the purposes of them. Well, all right. Now he turns from there to the Ethiopians. Now Ethiopia is to the south. Now near the south, way down south is Ethiopia, even down below, further south, and that's going up the Nile, go up south in Egypt. So as you go up south there, you'll find that going to Egypt and below Egypt, or rather the south of Egypt, and the upper Nile was Ethiopia. So here he moves from west to east, and now then to south. And what he does to Ethiopia would include Egypt in between as well. He doesn't say much about that. Ethiopians also, that also means that puts them in the same class as these others. You shall be slain by my sword. All right? So that's all he says about Ethiopia. You'll be slain by my sword. Right now, back down a few months ago, it might be a year or two, and I don't know, when we were studying Ezekiel, he pointed out in Ezekiel that God said, I will put my sword in the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar was God's sword. God put his sword in the hand of Nebuchadnezzar and sent him against Egypt. Remember, I don't know whether you remember that reading, that prophecy in Old Testament chapter 32 or 3 along there, or 4, somewhere in that, 8 or 30, 34, 5, why we pointed that out, if you recall. And now he turns to the north. And he moves up here to Assyria, and Assyria way over here to the north. So now then, from west to east, from south to north, the judgment's going to be universal for all the people of that day. And now let's look at this. Now here's a, think about pronouncing a judgment like this. While that nation is still the dominating power of the world. Now suppose somebody would say today, a prophecy of the United States and what's going to happen to it in the next few years. I wouldn't dare do that. I only know that the judgment will come. I know that, because it always has. I know that God always acts the same. But now then, while Assyria was still in its power, some few years before it fell, was still the dominant world power, he makes this prophecy. Now look at it. And he will stretch out his hand against the north and destroy Assyria, and will make Nineveh a desolation and dry like the wilderness. Now I believe in our next book, the next is Nahum. I'm taking chronologically. But now Nahum is a prophecy of the destruction of Assyria, of Nineveh. It's just a one-track book. It just has one theme, and that's the destruction of Assyria. Right now, Zephaniah, his one-track mind is judgment. He includes all the world, east, or west, east, south, and north here in this. Right? Now, dry like the wilderness, and herds shall lie down in the midst of her, all the beasts of the nations, both the pelican and the porcupine. Now, those symbolize doleful creatures. They were creatures that were found in doleful places, like in the ruins of a city. Out here in the wilderness of the desert, something like that. Now, so he mentioned these doleful creatures here now. In the midst of her, all the beasts of the nation, both the pelican and the porcupine, shall lodge in the capitals thereof. Their voice shall sing in the windows. Desolation shall be in the threshold, for he laid bare the cedar work. Now, every bit of that is destruction. The judgment of God against Nineveh, against Assyria as the nation. Nineveh was the capital of Assyria. Right? And so here it is, and herds will lie down. They'll be completely and totally destroyed. This is the joyous city that dwelt carelessly, that said in her heart, I am, there's none besides me. Now later, Babylon said the same thing. Oh, in the 47th chapter of Isaiah, Isaiah says that Babylon was saying the same, I am, and there's none besides me. Who will bring me down? God said, I'll do it. And you remember Edom said, I exalted himself and asked, who shall bring me down to the ground? God said, though thou mount on high as the eagle, and though thou set thy nest among the stars, I will bring thee down from thence, saith Jehovah. That's one of the most majestic passages. That's Obadiah verses 3 and 4. I memorized that years ago. I heard a man quote that when I was in college there. I went out to hear him preach and quoted that. I thought that was so beautiful, majestic. I went home and memorized it. And I like to quote it because it is such a majestic statement. Oh, the pride of thy heart and deceive thee, O thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, that settest thy nest on high, that saidst in thy heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? Though thou mount on high as the eagle, though thy nest be set among the stars, I will bring thee down from thence, saith Jehovah. You can't find anything more majestic than that. Old Bill Shakespeare never said anything prettier than that, did he? And I don't know why these colleges have these students memorize Shakespeare instead of memorizing Isaiah. But and Obadiah. At any rate, it's a great passage. So here they said that desolation that none besides me. How has she become a desolation? A place of beasts to lie down in. Everyone that passeth by her shall hiss and wag his hand. Ah, out of the old city that ruled the world. Now we come to Nahum. Why, Nahum describes the destruction of Nineveh. This describes it partially. Just tells you how the tale is going to be. He describes it all. Oh, any question over this? Now, what I want you to see is the bleak doom of it. Scorched earth policy. God has his judgment going to bring all these nations, idolatrous nations who fought against him, and his people going to bring them to an end. Now, you remember I've quoted Jeremiah so many times, 30 and verse 11. God said, I'll bring all the nations where I scattered thee to a full end. but I will not bring thee to a full end. But said, I'll chasten you in measure. Right? Where are the Assyrians today? Where are the Babylonians? Where are the Moabites? Where are the Ammonites? Where are the old Ethiopians? Where are all of those? Who can say I'm a descendant of this people? Nobody. Where is the Jew? Well, you can find him down here in Tucson, over in Jerusalem, either place there, or on television there. You know, most of those fellows are Jews. Most of them, a lot of them are. And they're just as distinct a people today as they were then. They stand as a monument to the fact that God spoke. God said, you're my witnesses. These Jehovah witnesses, they missed the point 1,000 miles. The only Jehovah's witnesses on earth are the Jews. God said, you're my witnesses. Not that they believe in God or serve him, but the fact that they stand as a distinct people. All right? That's 30:11. All right. So now then, that gets the nations. But now he turns now back to Judah again. He already mentioned Judah back in chapter 1 and the first part of chapter 2. Now after he looks at all these nations, now he comes back here to Judah. Now remember that this time Israel was already in captivity. All you have here is Judah left down here. Now he turns to them. Woe to her that is rebellious and polluted, to the oppressing city, that's Judah, Jerusalem. She obeyed not the voice, she received not correction, she trusted not in Jehovah, she drew not near to her God. I know these are things she didn't do. She didn't obey, she didn't receive instruction, she didn't trust, she didn't draw near unto God. She left God out of a thing. Preached a sermon one time on when God is left out. But when we leave God out of our thinking, this is what happens. All right, now notice. Her princes in the midst of her are roaring lions. Her judges are evening wolves. They leave nothing to the morning. Now notice, after he tells that the whole city, how that she obeys not and listens not to God. Now he turns to the princes or the rulers there, then and the judges, and then to the prophets. So like Micah did. Micah, you remember, dealt with him back in his day. Now then, Zephaniah are doing the same thing. Are her princes in the midst of her are roaring lions. Well, I mean, fierce individuals roaring after the prey, robbing the people, taking everything, getting it for themselves. The judges are evening wolves. Now, the evening wolf is a wolf in that country that scavenges. Come around, and you see them in the evening, come out here at the edge of town, or the edge of the society, the edge of the place where they're looking for something to scavenge them. They were fierce, though. Don't tackle one of them. Don't combat one. The evening wolf, they leave nothing till the morning. Eat up everything they can find. Well, that's what the judges are doing that time. Her prophets are light and treacherous persons. Prophets were false prophets. And he mentioned, the only time he mentioned them, they were prophets who were treacherous, teaching the people falsely, leading them astray. Now, no fourth are the priests. Her priests have profaned the sanctuary. They have done violence to the law. All right, so here's what the whole city has done. It's a pressing city. They received not instruction, correction, trusted not in Jehovah. They drew not near unto God. And now then, those are the things she didn't do. Four things. Now here are four rulers, princes, judges, prophets, and priests. Now the political leaders. And here are your religious leaders. All of them were false. Now Jehovah in the midst of her is righteous. He will not do iniquity. Every morning doth he bring his justice to light. He faileth not, but the unjust knoweth no shame. Even God's in the midst of them, but they've so rejected God that they're not conscious of the fact that they have no shame in what they're doing. They've left God out. They've rejected God. I just tell you right now, I don't care who the people is. You can't reject God and get by with it. When a nation rejects God, it's going to pay the price. When an individual rejects God, he's going to pay the price. You cannot, with impunity, reject God. You've got to recognize him because he is God. Now, that's what our preaching is about, to try to help us to realize that. Our teaching is to bring us closer to him, make us more conscious of him and of his presence and of his rule and our responsibility to him. And told him, I think that's the purpose of our preaching and our teaching, is all of that. It's not for entertainment. And then when we turn our preaching and our teaching and our religious services into entertainment, well, that's an insult to God. But all that, no notion. Now here's what God said I have done. I have cut off nations. I'll cut off nations. The battlements are desolate. Now the battlement is that tower at the corner of the wall. Here the wall comes in here. Here the tower here. Wall comes into another, oh, down there's another tower here. Those towers were the battlements of the city there. God said, I'll cut them off. And that's why they stayed to watch out for the coming enemy and give warning and all that. God said, I've cut them off. And cut off the nation, their battlements are desolate. I have made their streets waste so that none passeth by. Their cities are destroyed so that there is no man, so that there is no inhabitant. Now, it hadn't happened yet. God speaks of it, it already happened. Some of them have, of course. Some have been cut off. Hear what God said I do. I cut them off. So just give God a little time, and he'll always do that. We get all excited about Hussein over there now. Our president told him about going back over there and finishing a job that he had did before. Now to me, about whether now or not, some other time, God eventually will cut him off. What if eventually cut us off also? We'll be cut off too because of our pride, our rejection of God. And it's a sad thing, isn't it? To me, it's a scary thing. I probably won't be here when it happens. My children, grandchildren will. I think they'll be around when that takes place. Some of you may be. I may be. I don't know. We don't know that. Why, there's no and no heaven. I said, now here's what God said. Only fear thou me. Receive correction, so her dwelling shall not be cut off, according to all that I have appointed concerning her, but they rose early and corrupted all their doing. Now what did God say to you? Well, now, fear thou me, and that means to reverence God, respect God, and receive correction. Receive his instruction. Correct your life according to it. That's what God wants. I'm amazed at the mercy and the love and the compassion of God. I stand amazed at what he puts up with and willing to receive a fellow back when he done what he done. I dealt with David that committed adultery and covered with murder. God forgave him. Here's a nation here that here was Judah and Israel. Israel didn't repent when God sent Amos and Hosea to them. Judah did when he sent Isaiah and Micah and gave them Hezekiah. They repented and lasted 135 years. God received them. What does that teach you and me? If we could get this country to turn around and respect God, it may not be too late yet. But the way we're going, I don't see any indication of that. Do you? If you do, tell me. I could be wrong on it. Maybe you're seeing something I don't see. I don't know. Maybe. If you do, you see it. I don't. Well, all right. But now he said, instead of that, you've appointed, you get up early and corrupted all their doing. You just get up early in the morning, get back to your sin, whatever it is. Not many green spots in this book, are there? Not many beautiful fountains of water. Not any clear, bubbling springs or streams here. But there are fire pits and destruction. Cities that are laid waste here. All that sort of thing. Waste and desolation. That's the consequence of judgment. Judgment leaves that kind of a condition. Therefore, now here comes the conclusion based on what he said. Therefore, wait ye for me, saith Jehovah, unto the day that I rise up to the prey. Now this word wait, I think one of the greatest of them is Isaiah the 40th chapter. They that wait for Jehovah shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Those that wait for Jehovah, they renew their strength. Over and over in the Bible, Isaiah especially, said, wait for Jehovah. Here they were wanting to take control of things and said, no, wait for Jehovah. Well, what does that mean? That means then that you trust him, that you let him lead, let him direct, let him guide. You put him first there. Well, they that wait for Jehovah shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Well, I memorized that many years ago, and I've always loved those two verses. Oh, I love them very much. But it moves on now. They wait for Jehovah here. Wait for me, says the Lord. till I rise up. Now you rise up early to corrupt things. I'm going to rise up early to judgment. I'm going to rise up to judgment rather, and to deliver the faithful people, to gather the nation, that I may assemble the kingdoms, to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger. All the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. Right, and I know this is a world judgment that he talks about here, that's on its way. Now he says, for then they're going to be devoured with the fire of his jealousy there. After judgment, now then salvation. Now it's when they come to the only beautiful part of this little book. Now know it. For then will I turn to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of Jehovah, to serve him with one consent, or one shoulder, or one lip. Now this is messianic. Now here God will give us one language, let us all speak the same thing, let the oracles of God speak. That's the language we're to speak. From beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, my supplicants and supplants, even the daughter of my dispersed, shall bring mine offering. Right now here, even beyond the river, they're going to bring offering unto Jehovah. Now what will it be? In that day shalt thou not be put to shame for all thy doings wherein thou hast transgressed against me. For then I will take away out of the midst of thee thy proudly exulting ones. Thou shalt no more be haughty in my holy mountain. I know that expression ought to be underscored in your Bible. In my holy mountain. So you remember in Isaiah the 2nd chapter, that the mountain of Jehovah's house shall be established on the top of the mountains. And also he speaks of the holy mountain in Isaiah the 11th chapter in the last verse of it. So here's his holy mountain is the kingdom of God now. So now then in his holy mountain here, the proudly exalting ones are cut off. It'll be altogether different. But I will leave in the midst of thee an afflicted and poor people. Now, Micah, you remember, said the same thing there. Be found in their mouth. For they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. Now, these are in the kingdom, in the holy mountain. This will be under the Christ, under the Messiah. So, with all these, however dark picture may be painted concerning the people of God, there's always a bright light shining through the cloud. There's a break there somewhere, every one of them. It deals with God's people. Sing, O daughter of Zion, shout, O Israel. Be glad and rejoice with all the heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. These are the faithful people. Here. All right, God's saved now. Jehovah hath taken away thy judgments. He hath cast out thine enemy. The king of Israel, even Jehovah, in the midst of thee, thou shalt not fear evil anymore. In that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, fear thou not. O Zion, let not thy hands be slack. Jehovah thy God is in the midst of thee, a mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will rest in his love. He will rejoice over thee with singing. Now that's the new king, the spiritual king. That's us. He's in the midst of us. So fear not. What have we got to fear? God be for us, who can be against us? We're told in the Bible. So remember, now here, notice these eyes. Now these are eight of them. I will gather them that solemn for the solemn assembly who were of thee, to whom the burden upon her was a reproach. And God's going to gather these that were scattered now that will come. Behold, at that time I will deal with all them that afflict thee. Another eye. And I will save that which is lame and gather that which was driven away. And I will make them a praise and a name whose shame hath been in all the earth. At that time I will bring you in, and at that time will I gather you, for I will make you a name and a praise among all the peoples of the earth, when I bring back your captivity before your eyes, said Jehovah. But remember, he's talking now about the holy mountain, and I'm talking about what he's going to do when he simply brings them back from captivity, although he would have done much more for them than they let him. Now, in Deuteronomy, I pointed this out sometime, 30th chapter, I said, I'll do you better than I did to your fathers. Over in Ezekiel, God said the same thing. I'll bless you above your fathers. Well, did he ever do that? No, not as a nation, because he wouldn't let it. So he came back in captivity. took 16 years before they built the temple, which they would do first, but they didn't. And then, not only that, but they accepted then the Greek philosophy and religion when old Alexander came down through there. And so, and the Pharisees became extreme, and the Sadducees extreme in other ways. So they actually didn't serve God when they came back. So the whole thing, God was only able to do what he wanted to do under the Messiah, under the Christ, under him. So that's what the prophets are looking for. However dark the judgment, there's always that beam of light that shines through to God's people. Oh, when the Messiah comes, here's what I'm going to do then. And he done it. And to think about it, we are heirs of that. We're heirs of that salvation. That belongs to us. All those promises of the coming kingdom and God's presence, what God's going to do, these are to us. And oh, that we would appreciate them. We don't, too often. Well, I guess my time is up. I'm not sure. I think my next book is Nahum. Obadiah, let's see, Obadiah, Joel, Jonah. Then comes Micah and Amos and Hosea, Micah. And then comes Zephaniah. I believe it's Nahum. I believe Nahum is next. At any rate, I'll just suggest that to you now. We'll make Nahum our next book here. And Nahum and then Habakkuk. All right, so take Nahum the next time, and you want to find that it's also a judgment. It's a judgment against Assyria now. And this was a universal judgment, but beyond that universal judgment, and keep this in mind, class, beyond that universal judgment and the destruction of political nations, God is going to build his kingdom there. So when you read in the New Testament, when the fullness of the time came, God sent forth his son. He said the time is fulfilled, and the kingdom of God is at hand. And what was that time? Through the time, all these other things were involved, the destruction of nations, the scattering of the Jews, the building of synagogues, all of these things throughout the country constituted the fullness of the times. So next time, take the book of Nahum. And I hope you read this once in a while, every now and then. And remember what Zephaniah said. Great little book. Classic excuse.